This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
All week, Suisei has been working in the Buddha Hall, which was transformed into an ancestor's hall. And this is part of the tradition of transmission going back into at least the 1200s, probably before then. And that whole week of training and then the formal transmission ceremony itself, which began last evening and ends this morning, is done mostly in private, just between the teacher and the disciple. But we do this entering ceremony so that the Sangha can be a part of this in this way and acknowledge Suisei's transmission.
Since the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, true Dharma has liberated countless beings. Having traveled this far, I see not a single step was taken and not one being was saved. I vow to protect what cannot be corrupted and to maintain what has never appeared. This is a sacred trust.
How can a person of true rank, of new ancestor, appear and fulfill the sacred trust?
I vow to fulfill my responsibilities.
The sacred fetus must continue to be nurtured. Vast is this realm of liberation. The back reads, the Buddha Mind Seal is transmitted this day, April 8, 2018, to Vanessa Suisei Goddard. Buddha Mind is originally thus. And now, as we say, we'll do Jahai, led by the attendant. And so please, as she passes, congratulate her with a standing bow. One day, Layman Pong was sitting in his thatched cottage with his family, and he said, "Difficult, difficult, difficult, like trying to spread 10 measures of sesame seed all over a tree." And his wife, Mrs. Pong, said, "Easy, easy, easy, like touching your feet to the ground when you get out of bed." And Ling Chao, their daughter, said, "Neither difficult nor easy. On the 100 grass tips, the ancestors' meaning." This morning, we're concluding an introductory retreat. So a number of you have been here this weekend and joining us in training and learning a little bit about Buddhism and our particular way of training. April 8th is also the day we celebrate the Buddha's birthday. So it's the day when he's celebrated to have been born and taken 7 steps after leaving his mother's side and pointing to the heaven, pointing to the earth and saying, "Between heaven and earth, I alone am the honored one." And it's also the day where another Buddha was born. This one over here. So all week, as I mentioned earlier, Suisei has been involved in transmission. And this is, as I spoke about, I think, yesterday in my session with those for the retreat, that since the time of the Buddha, there's been always been a way of
of conferring the authority to teach, to be a guide for others in the Buddha Dharma. And in the Buddha's time, he recognized different disciples as having particular strengths or capacities to teach in certain aspects of his teaching or the practice. And in the Zen tradition, that the Buddha is said to have transmitted to Mahakasyapa, who was one of his closest and most important disciples. And I'll say a little bit about that later. So there was always the need to both recognize when a disciple was had developed to the point where they could, in a sense, both guide others, but also guide themselves. And so in a sense, with transmission, the disciple is being recognized to now study the Dharma through the Sangha, through the world, through their mind, and to more and more be their own guide. In a sense, that's what all of training is about, is that even within the structure of practice and you know, the eight gates of training and all of the guidance that was received through seniors and direct teachings and face-to-face with the teachers, that all of that is both to awaken one's inherent Buddha nature, one's wisdom and compassion, and to increasingly become adept at seeing oneself, so that more and more we know when we're stuck. We know when we're hiding. We know when we're not practicing. We know when we're practicing well. And that that's not coming from a place of ego. Increasingly it's coming, or decreasingly it's coming from a place of ego. It's coming from a clearer and clearer sense of really aligning one's own aspiration to be awake and to live an awakened life and a life that is beneficial, and that becomes more and more important than protecting oneself, putting oneself forward and being seen in a certain way, maintaining one's identity and so on, as that is all seen as illusory sort of, you know, sleights of hand that really don't go very well and are not satisfying and cause a lot of pain, that we become, in a sense, in the beginning, where, you know, we're often reliant upon others to point things out. You know, we're the last ones to know. Everybody else knows we're the last ones to know about ourselves. And more we should be the ones who know, right? We sort of get out ahead of that, in a sense. But because the path is endless, wonderfully so, and because delusion is deep, and because perfect enlightenment is a great undertaking, there's always more to see. There's always some delusion, some darkness, some attachments that are functioning in this present moment that we're still not seeing. And that's whether we're just beginning or have, you know, developed some maturity or as teachers. And so we're still reliant upon the practice and the teachings and the Sangha, those around us, as well as in our own capacity. And so when Lama Pong says difficult, 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 like trying to spread 10 measures, a whole bag of sesame seeds over a tree, they just keep slipping through. It seems impossible. And so many times students will ask, why does it have to be so difficult? And the correct answer is, why does it have to be so difficult? You know, we're not trying to make things difficult. We're trying to make things easy, right? That's why monasteries exist. The rigorousness, and of course there are, you know, there's a spectrum in Buddhist traditions and different lineages and different places of practice, of different degrees of, you know, rigor. And, you know, our practice here is somewhat rigorous, a bit rigorous. That the purpose of that is to bring us up close. It's to bring us, it's to bring the you that is the universe up close to the you that is the person. It is to bring the you that is the person up close to your mind. And so in a sense, we have to be continually startled and shaken, right, out of a kind of slumber, sleep state, a dullness, an overabundance of activity and distractedness. In other words, we have to get our attention taken, right? So we're actually paying attention so that we can see where we are, see what's happening, and respond. And so when Layman Pond says, difficult, 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 what's the big deal? I mean, if they're attachments, just let them go. If you have false views, just clear them up. If you have ingrained patterns of mind and body, just stop falling into those patterns. Why is it so difficult? From the very beginning, the Buddha acknowledged this. And he taught, he said, there are some habit patterns that are so deep, right, that we will, you know, through much of our lives, continue to work on those patterns. And I know when I heard that, you know, because our minds are so dualistic. So I would think, okay, it either all works or none of it works, right? I either get completely liberated or I'm completely deluded. So when I would hear my teacher say this, I would hear, oh, it just, everything stays the same. And this is just keeping us off the streets, basically. So we don't cause any more trouble. But that's not at all what happens. I mean, of course that can't be what happens. And in the same way that every practitioner who's practiced for any degree of time sees shift and change, that's what's happening. That. And it continues and it continues and it continues and it becomes deeper and broader and deeper and broader and clearer. And it continues. These attachments are so permeating our being into every cell, influencing every action, forming every perception. That's why Buddhism teaches that it couldn't possibly have all been put together just in this lifetime. Everything we experience seems to speak of a mind and a body that is me. That is myself. It gets a name. I put clothes on it, on the body which is me, right? It all just seems so irrefutable, undeniable, inarguable. But if that's true and we live in accord with that self that is separate from everything, then why isn't all working more splendidly? Every day gives a sense of permanence and continuity, and that is what Buddhism calls our delusion. So when Layman Pong says, difficult, 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 is he talking about samsara? These endless cycles? Is he talking about enlightenment? Is he talking about himself? I remember reading when I was preparing for this, I remembered reading a book when I was in high school by Thorstein Veblen. I don't know how I came across this book, The Theory of the Leisure Class. And in it, he said something like, you know, at the end of the day, when work is done, you've made meals, your meal, you've had your supper, you've washed the dishes, the kids are in bed. Now what? In other words, when all of the things that are part of our life are taken care of, now what? And I remember, you know, I was just a kid. I was in high school. But I remember something about that really grabbed me. Bodhicitta speaks in, as Dogen says, in unrecognized words, a voice from the deep. Words, he says, that are all-inclusive of mind that is all-inclusive, regarding things that are all-inclusive. You know, it's interesting that the Buddha defined dukkha as unsatisfying and disappointing. And so there's this essential part of ourselves which is by its very nature unified. But perceiving disunity, perceiving alienation, estrangement, the lack of connection, lack of intimacy, we go searching. And that cycle goes on, and we don't satisfy it through those desires. And it's interesting that our basic nature is already satisfied. So not knowing that, going seeking and finding dissatisfaction is just like a confirmation that that is the nature of dukkha, to not be satisfied. That is our nature, to seek that satisfaction. So really, we're constantly seeing the evidence of both our nature and the unskillfulness of trying to find that satisfaction in looking outward. Robert Thurman, the scholar and practitioner, said that, you know, we put so much energy into going outward, you know, even into outer space. He said we need to become inner astronauts. You know, we're deep within ourselves. And so we talk about having great faith and great doubt and great perseverance. Faith within the Buddha Dharma, within the teachings. You could say faith within the natural intelligence of this universe. How beautifully it works together, particularly when it's not disturbed. But even when we disturb it, as we so profoundly do, its natural intelligence cannot be destroyed. It just continues to absorb whatever disturbance we impose upon it, and it just continues to incorporate that in, even if it's to our own struggle. Faith also in our capacity to be a Buddha, to practice, to study the mind, to let go. Doubt is doubting not ourself, but doubting samsara, getting to that point where we realize, you know, I've been around this enough times to know that here we go again. It's not going to be different next time. It's not. So how do I get off of this? What is this? What is the this that I'm on? And perseverance is, as Dada used to, as Zen talks about, seven times knock down, eight times get up. And I remember Myotai Sensei would fairly regularly haggle with him and say, "Dido, that doesn't make sense. You get knocked down seven times, you get up seven times." And he would just look at her and say, "That's not the point. The point is you get up more than you've been knocked down. You're already getting up before you get knocked down." Mrs. Pong said, "Easy, easy, easy, just like touching your feet to the ground when you get out of bed." Dogen said, "If you want to attain the matter of suchness, if you want to realize your Buddha nature, you have to be such a person. You are already such a person, so don't worry. Easy, easy, easy. When you get out of bed, your feet touch the ground. The ground reaches up to meet your feet perfectly." A student came to his master and said, "I am bound, please liberate me." And the teacher said, who is binding you? And the student said, "No one." And the teacher said, "Then why do you need liberation?" And Ling Zhao, their daughter, said, "Neither difficult nor easy. On the 100 grass tips, the ancestors' meaning." She and Layman Pong, these are historical figures. They lived in the time, I think, 8th century China. Layman Pong studied with Matsu, a great master, a Chinese master, a Zen master. And they were very close, Ling Zhao and her father. And then they had a son, Lijiao, a brother, who wasn't interested, right? Because you got to have one, in at least one in the family who's like, this is stupid, right? So Ling Chao and her father were quite close, and he went traveling, and they made baskets to get by, and she was quite an adept. So we chanted her name this morning with the list of women ancestors. Once they were walking together, and he tripped and fell, and she threw herself down next to him, and he said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I saw Papa fall, so I'm helping." And she earned a reputation in her day as an adept. So she was revered for her compassion and admired for the simplicity and confidence of her practice. On the 100 grass tips, the ancestors meeting. Going beyond yes and no, beyond easy and difficult, female or male, enlightenment and delusion. Within the practice of letting go, to go beyond letting go altogether. What does that mean? It means to see that even letting go, ultimately, is an illusion. The self that has been let go of goes beyond letting go of the self. And so when you were downstairs in the dining room, if you haven't seen those 10 oxherding pictures, so that's a classical depiction of the spiritual journey, which is helpful, it's beautiful. Those were painted by a Chikihara sensei, a national treasure of Japan, a really renowned Zenga painter who came here to paint those, and then the poems that go along with them. They're very insightful, but they also create a false sense of chapters, right? You're in the first stage, and now you're in the second stage. You have left the first stage, and now you're in the third stage. Now you have left. You're not quite in the fourth stage. You know, that there's sense of, so it's very neat. You know, everybody, you know, I see people all the time, it's like, where am I? Where am I? You know, and you see people sometimes who are brand new, and they walk and say, I think I'm down here at the end. Because it's a formless path. Within all of this, it's a formless path. And every single person has one mind, and every single person is different. We can only practice our own karma. So why is it so difficult? We must ask ourselves, how am I making this difficult? How have I become accustomed to difficulty and seek it out? How not trusting am I of easy, easy, easy? How subtly does easy become just being passive or self-complacent? How easily does rigorous become forced and controlling? This is the radical nature of the middle path. It seems just, it's just like, stay in the middle of the road. What's so hard? It's not that. That's not what it means. It means not landing anywhere, abiding. In non-abiding. And that's why that you see that in the first of the oxherding pictures is a young, crisp, firm, eager youngster, kind of like you were when you came in. So we say came here in 96. Well, you became a student in 96. And came into residency, and she became a senior student in 2006 and received Tokudo a year before that. And so she was fully ordained and went through the whole discernment process of home leaving. And did that for many years, living here with the monastics, the community. Many of you were living together, practicing together. And she was studying with Dada Roshi, her first teacher. And then in 2004, took off her robes and returned to lay life and a life with her partner, Tenkei. And we found a way for her to do that with everyone's agreement and working together for her to basically sort of be here full-time as a full-time practitioner and senior and staff member and now teacher, and yet having a household, sharing that with her partner, and being a lay person. And so that was, and Kyosho also, for those of you who know him, is doing the same thing, and that was something new for us, but is so far seems to be working out well. And so today is completing her formal training in this transmission. And the sacred fetus is a term that is used, appears in early Chinese writings, and it's kind of a beautiful notion. And it's that at this point, you know, when the Huainong, who's the sixth ancestor, very prominent teacher in the Zen tradition early in Chan's history, and from which all subsequent lineages could be traced back, it was with him and his teacher, the fifth ancestor, that the transmission happened in secret in the middle of the night because of the nature of how he had come to the Dharma, which we won't get into today. But that tradition continued, so that the transmission happens in a room that is sequestered and the windows are drawn and covered, and so that it's a private. It's not that it's so much a secret as that it is private. And there are oral teachings, there are things that are really just happening between the teacher and disciple that are not published. There's the copying of what we call kirigami, which are teachings that have been passed down for generations. We don't even know how long because they're not dated or signed, but they're teachers they're teachings from within our lineage of teachers going back who have wanted to, who offered a teaching to their disciple, and that was written down and then became this sort of body of literature of teachings that we call kirigami. And within every lineage, there would be a different collection of kirigami, different teachings. So that's an important part of the week, is copying those in one's own hand and going over those with the teacher. And then creating a document on silk, which is a transmission document, because since the beginning, there's always been some way of confirming that a person has received transmission. And so there's the creation that Zuize had to do of a fairly elaborate document to convey this transmission. So why don't you say a few words, if you would.
Every morning, as part of my morning liturgy, I offer gratitude for this life that I have. First of all, for life, period, and then for this life, and also to those who have quite literally made it possible for me to have this life. And because there's three of them in the room today, I would like to thank them personally. First, there's my father, Eduardo. You've given me the gift of life, and you have shown me with your own life what it means to be good and straightforward. And you have never doubted me. You've never said, you know, I don't think this is a good idea. Maybe you thought that. You just never said it. But you've never doubted me. And I feel so proud to be your daughter, and I love you so much, and I am so glad that you're here. And although she's not in the room, my mother is in the room, and you know, she was the first one who taught me how to ask, you know, how to ask, what is this? And I think she would have really understood what it is that I am trying to do here. So I'm very grateful to her. And to my teacher, Shugen Roshi, for loving me and teaching me through my stubbornness and my pride, for never doubting me and for wanting more for me than I have sometimes wanted for myself. I will spend the rest of my lives, repaying my debt of gratitude to you. And to my wife, Tenke, my heavenly jewel, for all of it. I mean, how do you thank the sun for its warmth and its light? I cannot even express how grateful I am to be sharing this life with you. And I still love you madly and always. Shugen Roshi mentioned that it's Buddha's birthday, but it's actually a doubly auspicious time for me. This weekend, 23 years ago, is the first time that I came to the monastery and did this retreat, the introductory retreat. And so, I got off the bus from Philadelphia, where I was going to school, knowing that I wanted to know more about Zen, but really knowing very little else. And so I came full of anxiety and also excitement, and was stopped in my tracks as I walked through the gate because I had a feeling that I had never had before, and that was, I'm home. And that feeling hasn't changed, although it's taken me time to understand that it's, you know, not just, of course, this beautiful piece of earth and these buildings and these grounds, or Zen practice or this religious life, but that it's you, that it's also the Sangha, that is my monastic brothers and sisters, my teachers, and that relationship that I have with the Sangha and with the Dharma, these teachings, which really, I feel, have just shown me what it is to be human, what it means to just be a human being. And the Buddha, you know, who the actual man who began it all, but also all the enlightened women and men who for generations have said, I want to know what this is and that I can follow their example. And so that relationship that I have with these three treasures needs to be cared for and nurtured. And I haven't always done that so well, but that really is my, my lack of clarity or my lack of development at different points, because I do understand that these three treasures are indestructible, are uncorruptible. And I also understand that what I do matters. So I've thought about it, in fact, in terms of a tapestry that's a beautiful pattern, embroidered pattern, in which every stitch fits perfectly with every other stitch. And I can force my pattern onto it. And I have tried to do that many times. And when I don't, when I am able to get out of the way and let the pattern reveal itself to me, that is, in fact, when I am living in accord, when I can shine a light so I can see it better, see that pattern better. And so and even the times, when I don't, when I feel like I am trying to do something else, the pattern never disappears. It's always there. And so it always shows me. And so I've been learning slowly with a lot of work how to just be quiet, and how to be still so that I can, in fact, see it. I am deeply grateful to be here. I'm deeply grateful to all of you, because without you, I would not have this life. And you know, that once again, I understand, you know, my work is really to live that life, to follow that pattern, to get myself out of the way so the way can reveal itself. And that if I can do that and I can serve you, because when you are heaped with blessings, to try to give back at least a fraction of what I have received. I mean, what else would I do with my life? So, thank you.
Thank you. You know, in a sense, it goes without saying it, and so I'll say it, that this day is, you know, there's so many moments in the life of a Sangha, in the life of our Sangha, that have marked a moment in our development and our evolution as a community, as a practicing living thing, in our reverence and respect for our tradition, which I feel like very indebted to and grateful to Dada Roshi for teaching us and me in particular, I mean, because I'm speaking, teaching me that. And within that, also the courage and the wisdom to respond, to change. I was reading recently of some conference that the Dalai Lama was at, and some U.S. congressperson leaned over and said, if you could reduce all of the Buddhist teachings to just a phrase, you know, what would that be? You know, these questions. And the Dalai Lama said, everything changes. Everything changes. And so this is a day of change. And in a sense, it's a day like many days. And so there is something important and luminous about this day, and there's something very simple and ordinary about this day. And both of those are important. And both of those are important for us to appreciate, I think. One, if we miss the one, then we aren't appreciating what we're in the midst of, that abundance. If we miss the other, then it becomes something else. Something other, something not today. And so for so many years when Dada Roshi was teaching, you know, I mean, in the early years, for those of you who were here for the retreat, if you'd been here, did he do everything when you came?
Mm-hmm. He wasn't here.
But... Oh, he wasn't here. I mean, for years and years, he gave every talk. He, of course, there was no one else to do face-to-face teaching. For the introductory retreat, he did everything, the whole day, all of the sessions. In fact, when he first turned to the seniors and said, I want you to start taking on some of this, we were like, no, you have to be kidding. That's just not, no one's going to come, you know. It just was inconceivable, right? Because that was all we had known. That was all we had known, that was what practice was, that was what this monastery was, that's what it was. And each time one of those things changed, it was like, because we were, you know, needing to move forward at the same time, but wait a minute, it's always been like this. And so to have, you know, different teachers who are different people, men and women, younger and older, who have different perspectives, different life experiences, and it would be wonderful, and I vow that we will have even more of those differences coming in, so that there's more voices and experiences being expressed in terms of how to understand and relate to this Dharma. But it really, you know, it helps us. It helps make us more, I think it gives us depth and breadth and more resilience. Gives some of us a little bit of a break now and then. It's good for all of us, you know. I mean, a practitioner, the life of a practitioner is to be devoted to awakening everywhere, through everything. And so if no matter how experienced we are, if we're listening to beginning instruction, we don't hear something new, we probably aren't listening. If we're listening to a senior's talk, even if it's their first talk and we're not moved, we're probably not listening. It's constant, and that is so wonderful. When Master Dogen, speaking about his meeting his teacher, Juching, in China, he speaks about transmitting the treasury of the true Dharma eye, Shobo Genso, face to face, from Buddha to Buddha, ancestor to ancestor. That's how we're here today. It's people to people, person to person. It's not institutions. It's not by decree. The document that, as we say, worked so diligently on, that is so important, it's not in the document. It's always been this way. It must be this way. That's why it takes time. That's why we have to actually come together and sit face to face. Dogen says it was authentically transmitted through the 7 original Buddhas to Maya Kashyapa, 28 transmissions up to and including Bodhidharma, through China to Juching, his late master, through to Maizumi Roshi, Daito Roshi, myself, and Suisei. Dogen speaks about first coming to see Juching, his teacher, and says, I first offered incense and bowed formally to my master in the abbot's room. He also saw me for the first time. He saw me for the first time. I was seen for the first time. Upon this occasion, he transmitted Dharma to me. This is their first meeting. He transmitted Dharma to me, finger to finger, face to face, and said, the Dharma gate of face-to-face transmission from Buddha to Buddha, ancestor to ancestor, is actualized now. Transmission, in fact, is happening all the time when we practice. Receiving that which can't be given, purifying that which cannot be corrupted, maintaining that which cannot be lost. And because of that, we have to practice diligently, lest it be corrupted and lost. And so to Layman Pong's difficult, I would say thank you for your difficulty. Easy. Thank you for your easy. Neither difficult nor easy. Hallelujah. I'll end with a poem. Countless times my teacher went back into the dragon's cave for me. All for the sake of today. This cave, this difficult and easy. It's like the last cold wind before spring comes. Though not a single step has been taken, I bow within the footprints of the clear-eyed ones. Lives offered, lives devoted. How can I express my gratitude? Lifting my eyes, the face I see is yours.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.mro.org.